Hey, hey, welcome back to Loyalty Unlocked. For those listening for the first time, this podcast, including all voices, is AI generated based on posts on loyalty and marketing by my co-host, Mark Sage. So, if you've ever obsessively collected anything, stickers, stamps, sneakers, scented candles, you name it, then today's episode is going to hit you right in the nostalgia. We're diving into one of my favorite chapters yet from Mark's forthcoming book. It's called The Art of Collecting. And we're going to explore how this very human urge to complete the set is quietly powering some of the smartest loyalty programs out there. As always, I am joined by the man behind the book, loyalty architect, and recovering Panini addict, Mark. Welcome back.
Thanks very much. I feel seen already.
I mean, look, you opened the chapter by admitting you weren't even a football fan growing up, but still hoarded those sticker books like they were treasure. Let's talk about that.
It's true. I had absolutely no clue who most of the players were. I just loved the process, swapping stickers, chasing the rare silver badges, filling in every blank space in the album. It was this satisfying ritual that somehow made me feel accomplished.
Yes, there's something weirdly emotional about it. I still remember the joy of slapping that final sticker in and closing the book like I'd just finished a novel.
Exactly. That feeling of completion is powerful, and it sticks with us. As adults, we might not be collecting footballers anymore, but we've just swapped the stickers for shoes, handbags, or loyalty stamps.
Or avocado toast loyalty punch cards. Guilty.
There you go. The collecting instinct is alive and well. It's just been rebranded.
And in the chapter, you even mentioned Argentina's sticker crisis during the World Cup. That was next level.
Yeah, in 2022, there was so much demand for Panini stickers that the country had a full-blown shortage. It made international headlines, and the government actually stepped in. The trade secretary held a meeting with Panini and sweet shop reps to try and solve it.
I love that so much. Imagine being the minister of stickers. But seriously, it shows just how deep this runs. It's not just a kid thing. It's human nature.
Right, and that's why it works in loyalty. Retailers have been leveraging this for years. Stamp cards, punch cards, sticker promos in grocery. It's familiar, it's tangible, and it drives behavior.
Okay, so here's where my inner marketing nerd got excited. You dig into the behavioral science behind why collecting works, and you make a really important distinction. Stamps aren't the same as points.
Very true. Points are flexible. You earn a bit here, a bit there, and one day you might redeem them for something. Stamps are focused. Buy five, get one free. It's clear, it's finite, and you know exactly where you stand. They're essentially appealing to different motivations.
There's a clarity to it. Like, I can see the goal. I know how many more visits it'll take. With points, it's like, you have 8,422 points, and I have no idea what that actually gets me.
Yes, that's true, and it's not to say that stamps are better than points, they just serve different purposes. With points, you're tapping into the psychology around mental accounting. People assign a value to them, sometimes more than they actually deserve. But this desire to accumulate more value drives more spend. But with stamps, you're tapping more into the goal gradient effect, which says the closer you get to a goal, the more motivated you are. We do see that within points too, but typically centered around the timing of redemption. The challenge with stamps, though, can be around completion. People tend to drop off more easily, having put energy in to achieve them. So ultimately, stamps create a nearer and sharper motivation, especially when you combine them with what we call the endowed progress effect.
Ah, yes. This study was genius. Can you break it down?
So, researchers gave people loyalty stamp cards. One group got a card with 8 blank stamps. The other group got a 10-stamp card, but with 2 stamps already pre-applied. Same number of steps, but the second group was way more likely to finish.
Because psychologically, they already felt like they'd started, even though they hadn't actually done anything.
Exactly. That illusory head start gave them momentum. It's like joining a gym and being told you've already done your first 2 sessions. It changes your mindset.
It's also a little sneaky, but in a good way.
Well, I guess most behavioral science is a little sneaky, in a good way. Another good example is priming. There's this study where people were asked to put a tiny Be a Careful Driver sticker in their window. Then 2 weeks later, they were asked if they'd install a giant billboard with the same message on their lawn. The ones who had the little sticker were way more likely to say yes.
That blew my mind. Like, one tiny action literally redefined how they saw themselves.
Right, that's the point. Small actions lead to big behaviors, especially when they align with how someone wants to see themselves. And in loyalty, if someone accepts one offer, collects one stamp, or makes one choice, they're far more likely to continue.
So, let's talk about how this all plays out in real life. You took all this behavioral gold and embedded it into you rewards. What did that look like?
We started by using welcome offers to prime behavior. But crucially, they weren't just join and get free points. You had to transact, take an action, to earn them. That created a sense of choice and progress right from the start.
So people felt like they'd earned it, not just been handed something.
Exactly. That perception of effort matters. Then we introduced something that most programs avoid, a hybrid model using both points and stamps.
That's rare, right? Most programs pick a lane.
Yes, and for good reason, it's simpler. But we saw value in both. Points gave us flexibility across our coalition of partners. Stamps gave us short-term, focused behavior change.
Which brings us to 7-Eleven. Honestly, this part of the chapter was fascinating.
Yeah, 7-Eleven was a challenge. The average basket was small, and lots of items, like tobacco or mobile top-up cards, were excluded from earning points. So customers didn't bother scanning their loyalty ID a lot of the time. The perceived value just wasn't there. And this is true across any convenience retailer. Loyalty penetration is much lower than larger grocery stores.
Right. No one's opening an app for a couple of loyalty points on a liter of milk.
Well, with points that's true, but stamps gave us a new tool. We could run campaigns like buy 5 bottles of milk, get 1 free. It's simple, habitual, and it makes the program feel rewarding at a much smaller scale.
And I love the bit where you said some people internally were worried about it diluting the message, or even cannibalizing revenue.
Yes, it was a real debate. Some said, why add a second mechanic? Won't it confuse people? Others worried we wouldn't monetize stamps the way we do points. But we believed engagement was the bigger win, and the data backed us up.
All right, time to nerd out on results. What happened when you rolled it out?
At first, it was slow. We ran category-specific stamp campaigns, coffee, bread, ice cream, but the visibility was low. So we ramped up app placements, shelf signage, in-store promotion, and participation started to snowball. This was a great lesson in consistency. Wah. If we'd simply given up at the first hurdle, we'd have missed out on the really strong benefits we ultimately saw. Sometimes customers just need time to see something and to understand it. Marketing messages take time to embed themselves.
Any numbers you can share?
Sure. Within a year, 7-Eleven basket penetration rose by 4 percentage points, which is massive for this category. Members in stamp campaigns also spent nearly 50% more on promoted products. And the biggest insight, the type of product mattered.
Oh yes, you broke this down beautifully, stockable versus habitual.
Right. Stockable items like ice cream triggered bulk buying, great for short-term lift. But habitual products, coffee, milk, things you can't really keep, drove visit frequency. The spend per member was 3x higher on habitual products over time.
So one builds revenue, the other builds behavior.
Exactly. We also structured stamp campaigns in waves every 2 months. At first, I thought it might frustrate regulars, resetting progress, but it had the opposite effect. It created urgency and kept things fresh.
And you used auto-enrollment, which some would say is risky?
Yes, but it gave us that free head start again. People would buy a coffee and suddenly get a message, you've earned your first stamp. And once they were in, they were more likely to keep going.
I love that. You turned collecting into a habit, into a rhythm. Mark, this chapter was such a joy. It's nostalgic, practical, and so grounded in what actually drives people. From sticker swaps in the schoolyard to stamp cards in 7-Eleven, it's all about progress, identity, and that little hit of dopamine when you complete the set.
That's exactly it. Loyalty doesn't always need to be complex. Sometimes the most powerful mechanic is one we learned as kids.
Amen to that. So if you're listening and you're building loyalty, designing offers, or just wondering why your coffee stamp card works so well, this is your blueprint. You can read the full chapter now on Mark's Medium page. See the show notes for the link. And we'll be back soon with more chapters, more stories, and a whole lot more behavioral goodness. Until next time, happy collecting.